He's clearly talking about Ace Speedway season opening race in Burlington Saturday, where they pack that place to the brim. And to them, I say this. If Kyle Busch is calling out your racetrack etiquette, you might want to look in the mirror a bit. Based on what I've seen and who I've spoken to who were at the racetrack Saturday night, I was disheartened and made uncomfortable by the whole event. Because here's what was made clear to me. They clearly did not take the pandemic seriously. I'm not talking about the consumers who just wanted to go see a race. I'm talking about the organizers of this event. There was no chance for social distancing when they let in 4,000 to 5,000 people to attend this race. I saw the images. I talked to people who were attending it. Heck, I talked to one this morning. There was no chance, if you wanted to practice social distancing and the CDC guidelines that the governor recommended, that's been recommended nationally, there was no way you could sit on that grandstand and practice social distancing. It was impossible. The public address announcer, he was making jokes about it. He said, if you sneeze or cough, make sure you don't do so in somebody's face. As if you would do that 3 months ago anyway. And none of it is funny when you juxtapose it with the headline yesterday that 627 hospitalizations happened in the state of North Carolina as a result of coronavirus, the most out of any single day that's been reported since the pandemic started. It's not a joke, yet I look at those images and thought, man, this is brutal. Almost no masks, as Busch was referring to. That's not on the racetrack, the masks part. You can't really expect them to hand out masks, but you can say it's strongly suggested that you wear a mask. Or say if you want to attend the race, you have to wear a mask. You could do that. But the consumers, they hold some of this responsibility too. This comes from a core belief of mine to rely on people who have expertise, to rely on the experts. It seems like in the age of social media, since you have a method, you have a platform to spout your opinion on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, that somehow you have expertise now. Because you have a platform, you can have an opinion on a viral disease that you just learned about a few months ago. You haven't had any history working with viral diseases, any of that, yet you know better than Dr. Anthony Fauci. You know better than the people who are running the government, who were voted on, who were voted by us, the people, to sit in the offices that they currently occupy. I do this with sports all the time. There are takes I have on the air that weren't necessarily opinions I had, but things I adopted upon talking to quarterbacks, talking to people in basketball, things that weren't on the air, things that were told to me behind the scenes to help me understand things. You might not hear the name of the coach I was talking to, but they sometimes pass along information to me, and I trust their expertise to influence the way I think about sports. I think that makes me a stronger radio host. So when I hear the experts say to telling us to wear masks, and I see a racetrack with 4,000 or 5,000 people not practicing social distancing and not wearing masks, I'm uncomfortable by it. I'm disheartened by it because it felt very anarchist as well. And for what? Defying the government recommendation, not having more than 25 people in a place, outdoors, no more than 25. The reason they were able to do it, they cited the First Amendment. Hey, you can't stop our freedom to assemble peacefully, as if the founding fathers were specifically worried about not infecting people with a virus during a pandemic to make sure, God willing, we can go attend a race in Burlington, North Carolina. This isn't infringing on your freedom. I was offended when I learned that the PA announcer was talking about the founding fathers and this being a big day for freedom, that they were able to have this race at Ace Speedway. It was annoying. It was disheartening. It was uncomfortable. All of it. And I'm not alone in the way I feel about that. I've been talking to people in racing and in the NASCAR community, and they second what I'm saying. They follow what Kyle Busch said publicly to Scott Fowler of the Charlotte Observer. It was an uncomfortable, disheartening ordeal. If you have thoughts on the matter, I'd love to hear it. I know we have a big audience in Burlington. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you were there or have thoughts on what happened at Ace Speedway on Saturday. Or you can just simply tweet us at Sports Hub Triad. We're going to be joined by the head coach of UNCG basketball, Wes Miller, in less than 10 minutes. We need to get an update on our beloved NC Dinos. Robert Walsh doesn't know a thing about baseball. 144 games throughout the year. You're bound to have losses. The Dinos had two last week. Robert said it was an incredibly down week. Let's figure out how they did this weekend.
Josh, I think they heard my cries. They heard my cries, and they responded. Only one inning this weekend, the Dinos trailed.
Wow.
I think they really bounced back, and that all started out with a game against Hanwha where they put up a big
– Hanoi.
Hanoi, Hanwha, whatever. What are they going to do? Come beat my ass? They put up a big goose egg up against Hanwha, or they made the Hanwha, whoever they are.
Hanoi.
Goose egg. Hanoi. Who cares? The Dinos won 3-0 on Saturday. And not to be Trump, they go Sunday and put up 10 more on them. They beat Hanoi.
There you go.
We don't have to fix that in post. They beat Hanoi 10-5 on Saturday. Sunday, they roll into Kiwoom. Is that correct?
I think it's Kiwoom.
Kiwoom. They roll into Kiwoom, and they're like, damn it, I'm tired of this. We're going to keep putting up runs, and we're going to be the best team in this whole standings, Josh. That's what they said. They were talking specifically to you. And the Dinos did just that, beating the Heroes. 7-2, not even having to play the bottom of the ninth inning.
And that was this morning, right?
That was today, this morning. Mike Wright pitched a good game this weekend, too. He pitched on Sunday, I believe. So, and I keep waiting. When are we going to get the news on this dude coming on? I want to ask him what the partying's
like. I haven't reached out to Mike Wright. I can. I haven't done it yet. We have so much other things to cover that we haven't had time to add Mike Wright to the list on our NC Dinos Daily. But that is Dinos Daily. Three straight wins for the Dinos, as you noted there. They haven't lost consecutive games this entire season. They are 15-3 on the year. Haven't lost consecutive games. We've just been on this train since day one. We've been doing NC Dinos Daily, not knowing that the team was going to be any good. In fact, they were picked 6 out of the 10 teams in the KBO. And they're just crushing things. Led the KBO in home runs last year. What are we going to do when there's actual baseball in the United States to talk about?
I'm going to stick with the Dinos.
You're just going to stick with the Dinos?
I know the players. I know Parkman Woo. I know Mike
Wright. You can always learn who the players are in Major League Baseball. You can do that. And I think you'd be okay.
Is Greg Maddux still play?
I'm just going to let that sit.
I saw a stat.
Does Greg Maddux still play? I want you to figure out. I'm not even going to answer that question. I want you to Google Greg Maddux's career, and we'll find out together if Greg Maddux is, in fact, still playing baseball. Robert, who was an Atlanta Braves fan like 15, 20 years ago, what did you find on Greg Maddux, Robert?
Dude, he played for people after the Braves. That cheater. What a skink.
When was his last year in the majors?
Just running around behind everybody's back. 2008, he played for the Dodgers. I saw a stat
To answer your question, no. A dozen years ago.
It's been a while.
Was the last time. It's been a while.
Only 133 pitchers ever got to see a 3-0 count to him.
That's a great stat.
Well, we're back to it. Get it?
Well, that's not funny.
Back to the Drive.
That's moronic.
With Josh Graham.
Fifteen minutes ago, Roy Cooper was asked about the race with a crowd at a speedway in Burlington Saturday night, and he said the following, quote, "It is dangerous and reckless to try and draw a crowd. I hope and pray that no one gets sick or even dies from that gathering." And he added, "People who live in that area where this kind of thing draws people from potentially surrounding states and surrounding counties, it ought to be very concerning to them. I'm with Roy Cooper on this one, man. It was unsettling. It was disheartening. It was uncomfortable to see how many people showed up, that they weren't socially distant from each other, and very few of them were wearing masks. I strongly suggest you read the story that Andrew Carter, who's a guest on today's show, wrote about this, and it seems Roy Cooper is not happy at all by what transpired in Burlington from over the weekend. Something that we were all happy to see, live sports. It was Tiger versus Phil with Peyton and Tom Brady a part of it as well. It was the match too. And while Tom wasn't so good on the golf course, I gained so much respect for him watching, because didn't you feel like watching that, spending 5 hours together with those guys? Don't you feel like we got to know Tiger, Phil, Tom, and Peyton just a little bit? And surprisingly, I gained so much respect for Tom because he looked like all of us on the course. He looked like us the way that we would golf. He hit a shot from just before the green that he just pitched it way on the other side. It was easily the worst shot of the entire day. Tom also did the heads up, you guys, who were all standing on the green when he was trying to pitch one in, and it went 30 feet, and it just skidded very low, not even getting close to the green. We've all been there. And he was getting picked on. He was counting how many strokes there were on the first hole. He was us. He split his pants after the high point of his entire round. And getting to the high point of the round, he hit a couple of the best shots and acted really cool in doing so. Like, if you were struggling on national TV in a sport that wasn't your primary sport, would you be as cool as Tom was? Would you still be joking with people? Would you still be a good hang? Tom was. Like, everybody seemed to like each other, and he seemed to be a good hang. I think he deserves points for that. And when he hit the shot, nobody likes the guy who actually sucks, who gets lucky and hits a good shot, and then starts freaking out and talking smack to everybody. All he did was hit the shot and say, "Suck on that, Chuck." That's what he said. Tom, he had the second best shot, I think, too. Phil, the great tee shot. I forget what hole it was. It was a par four. And Tom, he buries the putt from just on the fringe of the green. It was as good of a shot as you're going to find in that spot. So I gained respect there. He was getting jabbed more than anybody else. Like, let's just hear some of this. Peyton Manning, before the round started, was asked, while Tom was standing right in the foreground, who he have as a caddy if they did have caddies.
If you could have brought a caddy today, who would it have been?
You bring Eli, could do that. You bring Nick Foles. I was thinking maybe Belichick. Bill Belichick, caddy for me. And just to see how that kind of would have worked.
You can hear Tom with the, ooh. Charles Barkley, who's known to be a bad golfer, he wanted in on the action. That's how bad things got with Tom.
Hey, Tom, it's Chuck. If you hit the green, I'm going to give $25,000 out of my own pocket.
Chuck, you're amazing. Done. Chuck, you saved yourself $50,000.
You know, Tom, I should have just said if you can just keep it on the planet.
I love Chuck. Just riding him throughout. There was the moment we learned Justin Thomas was funny. Saying, quote, "I'd love to see your fat ass dunk right now, Chuck." But more jabbing of Tom. Tiger didn't do much talking the entire round, but even he talked trash about how bad Tom's game looked.
Maybe fairway. Over on 7.
They were on 6. I would hit a fairway on 7. Tiger, he seemed to be the one you'd want to hang out with least out of the 4. Just didn't seem to be a cool hang at all. So, I don't know. Aaron, did you watch golf on Sunday? Did you actually watch the match 2?
You know, I didn't watch no damn golf.
Even with Tom and Tiger? And
no, I still didn't care.
Robert, I know you didn't watch any of it because you're sunburnt to hell. What happened?
I was enjoying my Memorial Day. We went kayaking and then kind of just hung out in the backyard, blew one of the inflatable pools up, just had a real good time.
So we had a best of show yesterday, so we didn't get a chance to do Let's Get Crazy. So let's knock that out right now. Phone calls welcome. Hot takes for the next 8 minutes. Bring them. 336-777-1600. We suspend journalistic integrity. We get reckless. It's a way for us to air things out that have just been manifesting itself in our minds over the weekend. So don't hold us to anything we're about to say here. If you have hot takes, bring them. 777-1600. Let's get crazy.
Crazy.
I'll get us started. The rules are simple. We will not judge a take for being too hot, but we will judge it if it's not hot enough. If you have something we deem red hot, we will reward you with this sound. Draft Day is actually a good movie. It's kind of like Skyline Chili. It takes like three or four times. It's an acquired taste. Like three or four helpings before you think it's any good. See, none of it makes sense. It's not realistic. Kevin Costner, he oversold it while it was coming out. Nobody believes the Browns would have a good draft. But then again, when you think about it, they did all this moving to draft a linebacker and a running back in the top 10 of the draft in 2014. It did seem like something the Browns would do in that regard. I created a drinking game for this on Friday night, Robert, and I polished off a half dozen beers. Like, a full six-pack, man. Just with this movie. So in an hour and 50 minutes, six beers polished off. Pretty simple rules, man. You just have to drink every time someone gets on the phone. Drink every single time. Just take a sip. Every single time Jennifer Garner's trying to let you know how much she knows about football.
Oh, that's a big one.
It's a pretty good one. You need to drink a full beer every single time a trade happens.
Okay.
So
you're drinking about 16. Three full beers just off the trades alone.
That's right. Robert, let's get crazy.
I saw some KBO highlights, and when I was watching, I noticed that at different parks, they had different things in the background. And one that caught my eye was Pokemon plushies behind home base. And that really makes me think that pretty soon these KBOs are going to have sponsored nights where one is going to be a Pokemon night, one might be a Breaking Bad night, one might be a He-Man of the Universe night, but KBO is going to get sponsored audience nights for different categories.
I like it. One game we saw Muddy the Mudcat from the Carolina Mudcats sitting behind home plate. There was the Woolly Bull from the Durham Bulls. Come on. Winston-Salem needs to step its game up. We need to have like a Warthog, and we need to have...
What
gosh,
the Dash's mascot?
I forgot the name of the Dash's mascot. I know exactly what it looks like. It's terrifying.
And it bolt.
Bolt! It's Bolt! Bolt needs to be behind home plate. We don't know the answer. Nobody does. I got something real quick here. Nobody's going to throw at the Astros this year. Nobody. That's the take. Because it's going to be completely forgotten by the time baseball games are played, and nobody is going to want to fight anybody because of social distancing rules. So there will be a stiffer punishment if anybody tries to fight each other. Nobody's going to throw at the Astros as a result. Aaron, let's get crazy.
There has been continued chatter surrounding the unretirement of a few aging boxers or aged boxers. However, that is not the fight we should look forward to. Audio recordings of Michael Jordan have been released saying he will not play on the Dream Team if Isaiah Thomas was selected.
That's right.
So, squaring off in a circle will be one Isaiah Thomas versus his heirness, Michael Jordan, in a celebrity boxing match.
How do you think that match goes?
I think Isaiah Thomas gets knocked the hell out.
How many rounds?
Three.
Okay.
Four.
Three or four rounds. I have one more here. We saw it in the match. Since caddies weren't allowed, they all rode in golf carts. What a cool deal that was. I love seeing golfers in the golf carts. Like seeing Tiger in a golf cart and hearing what they had to say when they were driving from place to place, from hole to hole. I thought that was really cool. So in the next year and a half, the PGA Tour, they're going to have the golfers actually ride in a golf cart. And those golf carts are going to be mic'd up. I think that would really add something. I even looked to see how much a golf cart would cost if you got it customized, but then I remembered, I don't golf. Robert, close us out in style. Let's get crazy, Robert.
What were you going to do, ride that golf cart to work?
Oh, no, no. It was just one of those things where it looked cool and then reason set in, and it just wasn't going
to
work.
I did that with a net gun once. I wanted to buy a net gun, but I
didn't
know.
What's a net
gun? Rob Dierdick?
He had the show.
Yeah, and they bought a net gun, and they were shooting all their friends with nets. It's like $125, but I would have nobody to net. Maybe I'll get one for here. Tom is going to get a deal for splitting his pants. Tom is going to sign a deal with some jeans, some pants company, which is going to involve him bending over to pick something up, and then he's going to look between his legs at the camera and say, "Not this time," and then that's going to be the ad.
I'll throw one more in. Eli Manning is already insufferable on Twitter. Everybody's like, "Oh, look how great Eli is." And then I see like six promoted tweets. I'm like, "Dude, you've been on Twitter for 2 or 3 days and we already got the promoted tweets from you? Get out of here with that." Aaron, did you have anything left in the tank?
Tom Brady is the most celebrated cheater of all time.
Whoa! Who else is in that category?
He's in an era. He's in a class by himself.
Maybe him and Lance.
A-Rod. A-Rod right now is the face of baseball on television. Like, he's going on during the match. Somehow we like A-Rod still. And A-Rod actually, you know, did a lot more cheating than Brady did.
Jerry Rice admitted to using Stick'Em.
Did anybody have interest in the Lance Armstrong doc on Sunday? Like, I remember they had all the F-bombs in the first minute of it, but I just don't want to hear anything that guy has to say. I'm completely out on Lance Armstrong.
It's not so much that, I mean, anything could have, it could have been Carmen Electra strip teasing on every channel, and I would not have been watching anything Sunday. I was just doing Memorial Weekend stuff. I don't know, nothing really made me come inside and watch TV.
There you go. That's Let's Get Crazy. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals comprise, make up what we call Sports Up Triad. In 30 minutes, we'll have our NFL trading card war next hour. Andrew Carter from the NNO will join us. It is 4 o'clock, top of the hour, so it's time for us to update you on some of the biggest headlines going on right now in sports. It is our Big Four.
Sail with the pilot.
All right, number four on the Big Four, it's time for our hourly sports coronavirus update.
Coronavirus!
Dame Lillard, who, remember, was on the call with LeBron, Steph, and all the superstars pushing for the league to return, he says he will not play in a restarted season if it's just a couple of games to get the playoff teams ready to go. Like, he needs to feel like there's a shot for him to play meaningful games, whether that's getting in, having enough games in order to get the Trailblazers back in contention, or having an extended playoff format, kind of like what we're seeing from hockey. Side note on that, the NHL is going to have a big press conference with Gary Bettman in 30 minutes, where they're expected to announce the return of hockey, the restart plan, as they seem to be ahead of Major League Baseball and the NBA at this moment. More on the Dame Lillard front, though. It's starting to look like to me that the NBA is going to restart in the postseason. Like, that does make the most sense, doesn't it? Adam Silver, he's been pretty strong, heavy on the front that he wants to have seven-game series. He doesn't want to disjoint the playoff format. So you can't really ask players to take what is assumed to be risk if you're not giving them a chance to compete for anything meaningful, like the Charlotte Hornets, the New York Knicks, the Golden State Warriors, etc., etc. So I understand players are going to want to get some games in order to be at their sharpest point, but that's kind of what training camp's for. That's kind of what being a professional's for, trying to find a way to keep your body in shape and to make sure you're ready to go. So I think the best thing to do is just to start things with the postseason, late July. Bill Simmons, he was pointing at July 25th, that Saturday being a start date and potentially a drop-dead Game 7 NBA Finals in this circumstance coming September the 20th, well beyond Labor Day, and the next season would start on Christmas Day. That seems to be a good plan. I would start with the postseason and not drag along some of these teams that have no shot and add to the risk that's already in place that somebody might get infected and that might lead to another team. Less teams in this circumstance, I think, make more sense. Number three on the Big Four. Ty Lawson deletes Instagram post in which he took shots at Roy Williams. Man, it wasn't a good look to have Ty. I don't even think I read the full quote because I can't read the full quote on the air when we first hit this. But it blew up immediately after I threw this on social media. Heck, even the folks in Kentucky picked it up, I saw. They said, Josh Graham, yes, that Josh Graham. He posted this tweet. Anyway, Ty Lawson said this, if you missed it. Quote, who talks bleep about someone who won them a championship? You're weird. You're misspelled. I got messages from 10 NBA GMs that said it came out your mouth. That's why I don't bleep with Carolina or support anything y'all do. It's a blessing that I don't open my mouth about bleep. They asked me why I don't show love to North Carolina. Roy Williams knows why. Oh, so Roy knew after all. I think he's going to regret this. Just like it seems Rashad McCants regretted what he said 6 or 7 years ago, he might already regret it since he deleted the post. I mean, his legacy, it's going to be defined by what he did in Chapel Hill. He's publicly spurning not just Roy, but the fan base when this comes in response to him being named one of Tar Heel fans' two favorite point guards. I do want to talk about that, by the way. I'll tell you who the best point guard is in North Carolina basketball history in 10 minutes. But also, like McCants, he has a daughter. Like, you're going to want to show your children one day what you did in the prime of your athletic career. And you're not going to be pointing to what you did with the Nuggets or Rockets if you're Lawson. You're going to be looking at winning a national title and going to a place where people loved you. And they love Ty Lawson still with the Tar Heels. You're going to want to share that UNC connection with your children. So I'm going to trumpet what Wes Miller told us 30 minutes ago who played with him. I just hope Ty's okay, because it's not an unreasonable leap to see the misspellings and to see how out of left field this was and connect some of the stuff that happened with him off the court in the NBA that derailed his entire pro career. The multiple DUIs, I think three of them, that cost him a promising career in the league, and think that maybe something was going on here on Memorial Day weekend. I hope Ty's doing well. He might have already deleted this, but that certainly is something people are discussing right now.
The hottest working man in show business. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show.
Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Andrew Carter, investigative reporter from the News and Observer, now with us. He was at Ace Speedway for their season opening race, which was packed on Saturday. But before we get to Andrew, I want to share with you some quotes from Roy Cooper in the last 2 hours, where he was asked about a speedway without social distancing. It seemed like without many masks, they're staging a huge crowd. And the quote from Cooper says this: it is dangerous and reckless to try and draw a crowd. I hope and pray that no one gets sick or even dies from that gathering. He added, people who live in an area where this kind of thing draws people from potentially surrounding states and surrounding counties, it ought to be very concerning to them. Andrew, obviously, coronavirus, we all know it to be very serious. I think the state of North Carolina yesterday reported 627 hospitalizations, which is the highest single day number that we've seen since this entire thing started. So I just want to know, when you see the news that the racetrack is opening up Saturday night and you're on your way to cover this event, what were your expectations going in?
Yeah, Josh, I didn't think it was going to be much of a crowd, honestly. I just thought that, it might be, I don't know what I thought, really. I certainly wasn't expecting 4,000 plus people there. I'd never been to a Speedway. That was my first time there. I don't do a whole lot of racing coverage ordinarily. And, I'd never been to that place, or Bowman Gray, I guess, is one in Winston.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know sort of what to expect, but it certainly wasn't that. I was just really pretty stunned when I pulled into the parking lot and saw how many cars were already there. Even 2.5 hours before the scheduled start of the first event, that place was already pretty full. People lined up from the ticket booth basically all the way back to the road, several hundred feet. So, from the time that I pulled in, I was very surprised at the scene.
Follow him on Twitter @_AndrewCarter. Read his stuff, newsobserver.com, and in the pages of The Observer. So let's get to practical stuff. How many masks do you think you saw Saturday night?
That I saw? I probably saw maybe 10. Out of several thousand. I was trying to figure this out, how many people would have been wearing masks. And obviously, it's more than just the ones that I saw. But,
what's
percentage-wise, it was an extremely low percentage.
What's the part?
Most people were not wearing masks. You had a very sporadic few here and there. I noticed some elderly folks sort of spread out here and there in masks, but certainly among people who were, younger than 60, I can't remember seeing, and who knows, this is just based on sort of perceptions and whatnot, but I can't remember seeing a quote unquote middle-aged or younger person wearing a mask.
Following your coverage on Saturday, I heard you noting some of the things, or I read you noting some of the things said over the PA about it being a significant thing for freedom, and about how the First Amendment allowed for them to peacefully assemble. And on top of that, it seemed there were even jokes made over the PA, make sure you don't cough in somebody's face if you have to cough, or something of that ilk. Would it be unfair for me to characterize racetrack officials at Ace Speedway not taking the coronavirus seriously?
I don't know if that would necessarily be unfair. It's tough to know what's inside a person's heart, so to speak, or how they truly feel about it. But I do think there was just a sense of, for one thing, I think a lot of folks there felt sort of satisfied, if you will, or pleased somehow that they could get together and do this thing. I think on behalf of the ownership of that particular track, it's owned by a father-son tandem, Robert and Jason Turner. I feel like they felt victorious, as if they had waged, this moral and ethical fight to hold this night of racing, and that they had won.
It was anarchist.
They felt happy about that.
Was it not? It was anarchist, wasn't it? Where you're just like, hey, we're being told that we can't do this thing. We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, and I think there was an element of that, sort of like, the governor tried to tell us what not to do and we're going to show him, kind of an attitude. And I think that was, the prevailing attitude among people who work there, the folks who run it. I think that's fair to say that they felt that way. And, from a lot of the fans that I talked to, there was just sort of this perception of, we got tired of you know, sitting at home without having anything to do, or this has gone on for too long, or I know people whose businesses have been ruined or who might be losing their homes or whatever. You know, there's a lot of talk just about the economic toll past couple months, people not working or not being able to open up a business or what have you. And so I think there was just a sense of, you know, this, we're Americans and these are our rights. And, you know, it gets into sort of this nebulous sort of talk about freedom and rights and whatnot. But I do feel like a lot of the so-called joy, if you will, that people shared in getting together the other night, you know, it was coming from there, even more so than, you know, people who enjoyed racing. You know, I think it went a lot deeper than that as to why these people got together.
He's on Twitter at @_AndrewCarter, investigative reporter from the NNO. One of the stories you did this year was on Wake Forest basketball, the state of things. The last time we caught up, I remember it was the day before everything. I think it might have actually been on March the 11th. We were in Greensboro talking about whether or not there would be fans later that night or if the tournament might get canceled, and look at everything that's happened after the fact. I remember you said, don't be surprised if these types of things are happening, as everything was still very uncertain. But Wake Forest, they make a coaching change. Steve Forbes is the guy. There are still a lot of uncertainties with what's going to happen with Danny Manning and the buyout front. But Forbes, he's already created a stir. He was on this show and he had the Kentucky jab, which attracted some attention. He also had the spiking of the medical face mask, which is something I don't think you would ever expect Danny Manning or Jeff Bezdelic to do. What interests you the most as a journalist, somebody who's a little bit more detached to sports than you were once were as a beat writer? What interests you most about Steve Forbes at Wake?
Well, I guess it's probably just, you know, whether he can get them back to what they were. You know, I think it's going to take a lot of work to just restore that program to, you know, any semblance of what it was under Prosser and, you know, those first, you know, the early times under Gaudio. You know, you go back again, like to the 90s, Dave Odom had them rolling, and you remember the glory days and Tim Duncan and Childress and, you know, Chris Paul, Josh Howard, all these great names coming through there in terms of players. And now it's like, you know, it's been really difficult to keep track of who's even on the team. Recently, they've had so much roster turnover and, you know, no one wanted to stick around and play for Manning. And what do they have, like three guys coming back off this roster?
Yeah, close to it.
You know, so for one thing, he has an unbelievably difficult rebuilding task ahead of him. You know, and Wake fans are going to have to be patient. You say that, it sounds kind of silly because they've been waiting forever for them to kind of get back to what they were. But that's what I'm most interested in, is just kind of seeing how he goes about this rebuilding process. You know, whether players stick around for him and believe in him. Clearly, that's been a problem for the past two coaches that they've had, is just retaining talent and avoiding that transfer cycle. But you look at it on the surface, and you have to be excited about the hire. You know, I think it's a great hire. I'm not sure who they could have gotten in there maybe that would have elicited as much excitement outside of, like, maybe a Beeline or whatever. But if you're going to go the route that they did, you know, trying to hire kind of an up-and-comer who's done a good job, you know, building programs at a lower level, I think Forbes is a great hire.
Another one of those up-and-coming guys is Wes Miller. He was on the show earlier, and he essentially just said that he wanted to wait and see on the Ty Lawson front where exactly yesterday came from, because Ty, if you missed it, he alleged on Instagram that Roy Williams was bad-mouthing Ty to NBA GMs. He also cryptically said it's a blessing for Roy that he doesn't open his mouth on some things, and he said he doesn't show any love for North Carolina anymore. You were once a Tar Heel beat writer for the NNO. I'm not sure if you've explored this much, but what did you make of that yesterday? It seemed like it came out of left field.
Yeah, it did. And I didn't cover, you know, the loss in years. I got there on the UNC beat a little bit after that. 11-12 was my first year, which, of course, a couple of years removed from that 09 national championship. But, you know, just on the surface, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, from being around, UNC basketball for as long as I was, I would say that the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of guys who have come through there and played for Roy have nothing but great things to say about him. You know, I think he's a guy who really cares about his players and doing right by them. And I think you can see that just in the relationships that he's built with a lot of these guys who come back year after year. You always hear about the Carolina family, and I believe in that. You know, I think it's a thing that exists in reality. You know, you see the number of folks again who come back and who love him, and you know, it is a tight knit bond. And you know, unfortunately, given some of the personal problems that Ty Lawson has had over the years, those have been well documented. You know, you just wonder kind of where his head is at right now. And on the surface, to me, it just kind of looked like a player who made some poor choices over the years in his personal life. And again, you know, addiction can be a very difficult thing. And I think you do have to have some empathy for that. You know, but Ty has made some questionable decisions. And to me, it kind of seemed a little bit like sour grapes, as if his NBA career didn't turn out the way he hoped or expected. And it seemed to me like a little bit taking this out on Roy Williams, because I imagine, you know, Roy is probably going to be honest with NBA people just about his experiences coaching guys. And, you know, maybe he did say some things that if it got back to Ty might have rubbed him the wrong way, but still.
Andrew, it's good to hear from you. Great reporting from over the weekend. I hope you're safe and well and that we can catch up sometime soon.
All right, Josh. Thank you so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
You got it. He's on Twitter at _AndrewCarter. Read his stuff, newsobserver.com, and in the pages of The Observer. So let's further explore the Ty Lawson stuff. Wes Miller, he joined us a few hours ago, and I asked him about the post and what he made of it as someone who was a teammate with Lawson for 1 year there. And this is what Wes had to say on that front.
It's kind of one of those things that we talked about it early with just all these different media outlets now, right? All the social media. Number one, I'm not judgmental yet. I mean, I'm not going to be instantly judgmental.
Right.
You know, I haven't been in contact with Ty recently. I have no idea. Is he going through something? Was that a rash? I mean, there's just people put things on their social media accounts all the time and then regret that, right? And to my knowledge, he's taken it down since then.
He has.
So I think sometimes we try to teach our players this. Be careful what you put up there, but because now it's for the world to see, right? You don't realize how quickly things can spread. So my initial reaction is I hope Ty's okay. I hope he's not going through something. I hope he's okay. And then my second reaction is I don't really in my heart believe that's how Ty feels. I never got that sense while he was in school there. I only played with him for a year. He loved North Carolina. He had a great relationship with Coach Williams. What they did together is incredible. I think he left there on great terms. I think it's probably a little bit blown out of proportion, and I think for me to have too strong of opinion or comment on it, I don't really know. I saw what everybody else saw, but it didn't sit right with me, and it didn't feel accurate to me. So I hope Ty's okay, and I think it's a good lesson of why you just don't post things. You know, you should be more thought out, but that's how social media can be dangerous.
So that's Wes Miller on the Ty Lawson front. The most interesting stuff from Wes, I thought, was him talking about the Wake Forest job. He was rumored to be a finalist with Steve Forbes, who, of course, got the job. And he spoke about how he handled that with his team. I thought this was very illuminating. Take a listen.
When things first hit the internet, all my guys just called me and asked me. So, you know, I think they feel comfortable enough in their parents. But I got a lot of calls, and we just had really open dialogue about that. And then, honestly, after Saturday or Sunday, when things were hit the internet, we didn't have to talk about it the rest of the week, because I think they felt confident where I was with it, and they knew that if they had a question, they could call me directly. I don't have to worry about what's being said on Twitter or Instagram or whatever outlet.
Very well said. We don't think about it on that front. Where if you're involved directly with it, okay. You can maybe drown out the media. Don't listen to Josh Graham. Don't read the Winston-Salem Journal. You could drown out the media. But Wes Miller has a family. And, you know, people are going to ask his family, hey, what's going on with Wes? I'm hearing about this. So then you have to address it with your intermediate family. Well, your decision affects your assistant coach's lives. And your decision affects your players' lives. So those guys, they're all on social media. They're all plugged in. You can't drown all that out. So those people are going to have concerns, and they're going to ask you, hey, what's happening here? It sounds like to me, and this is based on information I'm privy to at about that time, Wes, he told his staff, hey, this is something that's happening. I'm being looked at by Wake Forest. I'm leaning staying here, but I'm going to listen to what they have to say. And obviously, Wes is such a great coach that he progressed throughout the process, but I'm still skeptical that he was going to take the job. If he was offered it, I don't know if he takes it. He might have. He might not have. I don't know for sure. But it didn't seem like he was aggressively pursuing the opportunity. That was the feeling I had then. It's the feeling I have now. I think it's probably best for Wes that he stays at UNCG for now because, you know, he has this great roster coming back. You don't have to compete with Steve Forbes or Mike Young in the conference any longer. You bring in a top 150 recruit. You got your best recruiting class coming in. Some good talent already in place, even though you lose some really important players. I think this year it's set up for UNCG to win the SoCon and really have a special year. He can fully reap the benefits of what he did or what he's built with the Spartans before accepting an opportunity. There was a lot of awkward circumstances with Wake. The stuff with his dad, obviously, but it would have been a difficult job to step into and immediately have success. Obviously, there's a difference between your favorite and the best. For example, Coldplay's my favorite band, but I'm never going to say they're better than the Beatles. And Anchorman is hardly the Godfather. So I wasn't surprised when I saw Joel Berry and Ty Lawson were voted as Tar Heel fans' two favorite point guards in a poll that was put up or a bracket that was put up by the Athletic site. After all, at the Smith Center, Coby White, he was getting more cheers than MJ much of the year during the I'm a Tar Heel promo. But neither Berry or Lawson, in my view, are the greatest point guard in North Carolina basketball history. That title belongs to one man, Phil Ford. I don't even think this is close. I know some of you might argue evolution, progression. Phil Ford, is he really going to be up the snub against somebody as quick as Lawson or as big and tall as Coby White was his year in Chapel Hill? Also, how many national titles did Phil Ford win? He didn't win any, of course. To me, I think the stats actually hold up here. Phil Ford, for those who don't know, he is still second in school history in points. He's the first ACC player ever to score more than 2,000 points and dish out 600 assists. Oh, but Josh, kids, they don't stay in school for 4 years anymore. Ty Lawson was only there for 3 years. That might be true, but Phil Ford, you got to remember, he did all of that, all those things I mentioned to you, without a shot clock. And he was running the four corners offense. Which leads me to another point. He literally changed the game of basketball. When you discuss Michael versus LeBron, or whatever sport you care to discuss, the greatest quarterback ever, I think it's impossible to have the, and I think the dumbest version of the conversation is, what would happen if the two played one-on-one? You can't really compare eras of basketball, but you can compare influence. How much influence did they have on the game? That's why I think Michael's the greatest over LeBron. It's just impossible for LeBron to reach the point of influence Michael had on sports and also the NBA's growth. Phil Ford, he literally changed the game of basketball with Dean Smith. The four corners, I don't think it changes the rules unless it works to a T. And Ford was the best at running four corners under Dean Smith. He mastered it. And I think the Ty Lawson stuff from yesterday at Memorial Day, it matters in this part of the debate, a greater ambassador for North Carolina, Phil Ford, over Ty Lawson. Now, Joel Berry, he's a fantastic ambassador for Tar Heel Sports as well. But look at this resume for Ford. A North Carolina guy from Rocky Mount, shouts to Eastern North Carolina, an assistant for Dean Smith and Bill Guthridge for 13 years. 1988 to 2000, he was an assistant coach for them. He might have been on Doherty's first staff. I don't know for sure. He did some radio for the Tar Heels. He still goes on the barnstorming tour and is one of the biggest draws. And he's just a wonderful gentleman as well. So when I factor in how great of an ambassador you are for Tar Heel athletics, your influence on the game, and just the sheer stats, how good of a player you were, Phil Ford, he checks all three of those boxes, and he played over four decades ago. He's the greatest point guard in UNC history. So I get why he might not be voted today the favorite among Tar Heel players. I doubt many young people are going to say that their favorite movie is The Godfather. I don't think they're going to be saying, yeah, sign me up for Citizen Kane or Casablanca. They're likely to say my favorite movie right now, oh yeah, I love watching This Is the End, or I'm a big fan of Despicable Me, or I'm really excited about, you fill in the blank, Wolf of Wall Street, recent movies. Does it mean they're the best ever? No, but it's their favorite, and that distinction's important. But when I think about the greatest Tar Heel point guard in history, I think that's Phil Ford, and I really don't think there's a close second. You can tweet the show at SportsUpDryad, 333-6777-1600 is the phone number if you care to chime in that way. Ace Speedway, it's under fire from the governor, Roy Cooper, who's saying that if you just hear the tone of his voice, he's upset talking about the opening race on Saturday. It doesn't seem the folks are that concerned with how Roy Cooper felt about it. But this is the part I think we need to discuss, Robert. Wearing masks is not something we should poo-poo. It's not something that should be a divisive issue. Wearing masks, it's a sign of compassion towards others. In my view, it's changed on this over the last few months. I'll admit to you, when I was walking around Costco, where I shop, in the month of March, and I saw people wearing the mask, I had a couple laughs. I thought, okay, is this person either really sick, or what is he doing here? Do you think we're all going to get you sick? You might be taking this thing too seriously. That was my initial reaction. Then I allowed for information to influence my opinion. Don't come at me with all the science on this. Oh, are they actually effective or whatnot? Most experts who I rely on, as somebody who listens to people and has that influence my thought, most experts, they have agreed the right thing to do is to wear the mask. It's a sign of compassion towards others. Not wear it everywhere, but at least wear it. Like, I could give you my own personal view here. I'm not wearing it everywhere I go. Like, when I go on a walk with Sarah Bradford, I'm not wearing a mask. Just not doing it. Yesterday, it was a weird discussion, Robert. I'm not going to name the specific restaurant, but for lunch yesterday, I go to a sit-in restaurant. First time I've been to one of those since Stamey's at the ACC tournament months ago. And there's nobody there. It was strange. I had to call and just make sure that they were open. I walk in, I sit down. Usually this place I went to is packed, and I'm sitting there. It's around 11:30 because you know me, Robert. I don't really eat lunch at noon because I don't like crowds. No crowd to really worry about here. The entire time I sat there for about an hour, 15 minutes, hour and a half, there were two or three groups that came in the entire time. But the debate I had with the friend I went to lunch with, do you wear a mask when you're going to a restaurant? Like, I honestly don't know the answer to that. Like, do you pull down the mask to take a sip of beer? Do you pull down the mask to eat? So I didn't wear the mask when I walked into the restaurant. So I don't wear it everywhere. But if I'm going into a grocery store, this morning, I was told I got a haircut for the first time in a long time. And the person who was doing my hair, she said, you don't have to wear a mask. We have to, and we're going to make sure that you're safe. I still wore the mask because it's a sign of respect to them. But I wonder if most people view it that way. Like, how much does our preconceived notions, pre-pandemic, on what wearing a mask represents affect us still today? Where when you see a mask, there are some who are offended at the idea of it. Some think that it's a sign of you're worried that I'm going to make you sick. Rather than the other way around, you're just showing respect for people in doing so. Also, last thing I'll say on this, it's not asking that much. Is it? It's not asking a lot. When 9/11 happened, we had enhanced security at airports. We figured it's not too much to ask to take off your shoes and to make sure that we're safe when we get on a flight. Unlike that permanent reality, I don't think masks are going to become a permanent reality here. But as we open things up to make sure it's okay to go out and have an enjoyable summer, I think it's a great sign of respect for one another to wear a mask when you're out in public. Not in every circumstance, as I noted, but in most of them. If you're sitting in a crowd at a Speedway, you should be wearing a mask. Not doing so sends the wrong message. I don't know if I'm in the majority on that opinion, but that's how I feel about it, Robert.
No, I think some people look at it as like a sign of weakness when it's definitely not. It's just you being courteous.
That's another part of it, yeah.
And taking everyone else. I mean, you really are. You're affecting other people's lives when you choose not to do
but
that.
But is it more weakness for the people that are wearing them? Or is it you not wanting to offend somebody else? There are people who still view the mask as, you're worried that I'm going to get you sick. Like, this guy's wearing a mask. He thinks I'm going to get him sick. I'm fine, dude. Like, I've had people say that. I'm wearing a mask. Hey, no, man, it's fine. Like, I'm not sick. I'm tested. I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you got tested before, I mean, we come in contact with new stuff every day.
Right, but the masks, they're not trying to
exactly
protect you.
They're no sign of weakness, whether it's you or me that's sick. It's literally there just to help.
Right. Well, it just won't protect you from the actual virus. It just prevents you from potentially being the spreader.
It's just a courtesy.
Exactly. I think we're all on the same page here. I hope, at least. Okay, we're going to combine football and nostalgia during our NFL trading card war next on The Drive.
Stand by as we continue our dig for the truth and the toy at the bottom of the cereal box.
Oh, got it.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Each week, we open up a pack of trading cards, NFL trading cards, and then we combine that, already the nostalgia of trading cards, with the game of war. Robert, there are five superlatives that we have to try and fulfill with this pack of cards that we have yet to open up yet, and we have to try and place players in our 10-card deck into specific categories, and Aaron will then decide as the arbiter who ends up winning each of these five. Whoever gets three ends up winning the game. We call it NFL Trading Card War. Open up your pack of cards.
This means war!
You're a tough little guy, aren't you?
This means war!
Hey, it's cool.
This means war!
What? Does it have to? Can it mean something else?
Okay, you dirtbags! This means war!
Finish him!
All right! Let's open up this pack of cards here. taking a look at the deck. How are you feeling about it?
These rookies are definitely rookies. I think I have enough here to make it work. I definitely have more white quarterbacks than you do.
I might argue that. I have a couple.
How many you got? How many white quarterbacks you got?
Two.
I got three.
Wow.
So is that the win right there? Do I win just off white quarterbacks?
I don't know if that gives you an automatic win, but we could give this our best shot now. It is, the categories are most likely to put sugar in the spaghetti, most likely to build an underground bunker for the apocalypse, most likely to win an ESPY award for a sports blooper, most likely to sign up for a government program for superpowers, and most likely to throw the Monopoly board. All right. Really?
I think I'm ready to go.
Just tough going with the last two here. Like what order I should put them in. Okay. I feel good about it. Let's start with put sugar in the spaghetti. Where are you headed here?
I have Patrick Peterson here. He strikes me as someone who might be a little different than everyone else. I am not a sugar and spaghetti person. I don't think they go together. Initially, I had grits here. Josh said he did not eat grits, so we moved it to spaghetti. But I think Patrick Peterson would do either one of those. He would put sugar in his grits or his spaghetti. In my opinion, both are a sin.
I'm going with Amari Cooper because he's a turd. And turds put sugar in either spaghetti or grits. So that's what I'm headed with. I'm going to trust Rex Ryan's word and think that Amari Cooper's a turd, and that's what turds do. They put sugar in those dishes. Aaron, where are you headed?
Both of y'all are wrong because real players know that brown sugar and spaghetti sauce is fire. Patrick Peterson to me looks like a real player, whereas Amari Cooper looks like a split. So Patrick Peterson puts sugar in this.
Check one for the
All right, so Robert has Patrick Peterson. We're going to the second one. Most likely to have an underground bunker for an apocalypse. I have a feeling a white quarterback is coming my way from Robert. I'm going to go and counter that with Joe Flacco.
Nice.
Flacco, he's got that long neck. And I don't know if you know this, giraffes are one of my favorite animals. Very protective species, giraffes.
How is he going to fit that neck down in the bunker?
So he's going to be overly protective of his family and himself. That's why I think he's most likely to have an underground bunker just to make sure he already has made enough with that Ravens contract because of that playoff run to just stash things away in said bunker. You got to have a lot of cash flow in order to have something of that sort. So Flacco is my guy for the underground bunker.
I'm going to raise you Drew Locke. He went to school in Missouri.
Teammates last year, Flacco and Locke.
He strikes me as a country guy who didn't need money to do this because his hoarding family had already made a bunker, or preppers or whatever you want to call them. He's probably got mason jars full of dried beans and whatnot. So I'm raising Drew Locke here for having an apocalypse bunker.
Aaron, where are you headed?
I'm going Drew Locke just based off the fact he's from Missouri.
So ridiculous. Like, Flacco's from Delaware.
I think he's from New York.
New Jersey, actually.
Yeah, New Jersey.
Thank you for that. Number three, NFL trading card war. Win an ESPY for sports blooper. I'm going to pull out a big gun because I need to win this one. Eli Manning.
You got Eli. I've got Mitchell Trubisky.
Like, Eli's face is a sports blooper. Eli throws a lot more picks than Trubisky has. I mean, come on.
Give him some time.
Eli Manning. He does the commercials that are essentially bloopers with Peyton. Give me Eli over Mitchell Trubisky in this category.
I'm raising Mitchell Trubisky because I have seen him throw a double boop where a ball landed off his teammate's helmet, hit another teammate's helmet, and then they took that ball back for a pick six. So that's why I'm raising Mitchell Trubisky.
Eli Manning is an all-time goof.
Yeah.
I have no idea how he's won Super Bowls. I have no idea how he makes money at something athletic.
All right. So I'm back in the game. I need to win these last two in order to win the entire game. It's the NFL trading card war. All right. Fourth superlative. sign up for a government program for superpowers. I'm going to go with Greedy Williams, the quarterback from LSU. I mean, you're already an NFL player. You are talented as hell. Give me the corner, which, by the way, can you find a better corner name than Greedy Williams? Great at LSU, DBU. His name is bleeping Greedy, and he plays a greedy position. I think that's the position most likely to have somebody asking for more, even though you're already a superhero among people, a National Football League player. So Greedy Williams is my pick.
I'm going to raise you Chandler Jones, who I feel like I get every single week in every pack I draw. I got two Chandler Jones.
I always
Jones
get Jamal one. Adams.
Nice. I got Dexter Williams.
That's and Amari Cooper, for that matter.
I'm going to raise you Chandler Jones because I feel like his brother has tried every substance known to man to give him superpowers, and most of them are just cocaine. And following in his footsteps, I feel like he would have signed up for a program to maybe get some superhuman ability.
So the substance use by John Jones is translatable to the uses of Chandler Jones?
For sure. Argument. They're brothers.
Fair argument.
All right, what do you got?
Greedy's name is actually Andreas, but Greedy is an awesome nickname, amp for superpower.
Coming down
to Greedy Williams.
Coming down to the final one here. Most likely to flip the Monopoly board. Where are you going, Robert?
I've got Philip Rivers. Known hothead.
He is competitive.
Known to drop a couple F-bombs. Known to trash talk. I feel like this is going to be the guy that you're playing a long game, and then all of a sudden somebody's got a hotel on Boardwalk and Park Avenue. Rivers lands on it. He owes somebody $1,000, and oh, there goes all the Monopoly pieces. Where's the thimble at?
I'm going, it's all in the family, Marquise Brown. Antonio Brown's cousin, Marquise Brown. You got to remember, like the stuff that AB was involved in, who was the witness during all that stuff? Marquise Brown. So, Chandler Jones, you could do the drug argument and say it's not translatable. Marquise Brown here, I'm telling you, he saw firsthand the rambunctiousness of Antonio Brown and may have participated in the legal rambunctiousness that AB has had over the years. So Marquise Brown, he's the pick. It also seems like something a younger person would do. I know Philip Rivers, what, is 38 years old? I think as you mature, time allows for you to not do things, especially if you have kids trying to set an example. Marquise Brown, he's 20, maybe 21 years old. I'm going Marquise Brown, most likely to flip off the, not flip off, but flip the Monopoly board.
Literally just watched Philip Rivers act like a petulant man child on the field last season. He is a habitual line stepper when it comes to throwing hissy fits and crying like a baby on the field. So Philip Rivers will definitely flip over your Monopoly board.
So Robert wins the NFL trading card war. Okay, as expected, the NHL just had a press conference, or it's still going on right now. Gary Bettman, the commissioner, confirms the regular season for the NHL is over. It's going to be the 2014 playoff format that the Carolina Hurricanes were the one of two teams voting against. There's going to be hub cities, one in the Eastern Conference, the other in the Western Conference. He believes training camp won't start until the first half of July. He anticipates that the season's going to last until the early fall. So Bettman is still relaying information as we are talking right now. He confirms that the top four teams in each conference are going to play three-game round robins with playoff seeding at stake, while bottom eight teams in each conference will play a best-of-five series. So that 2014 format that we saw last week, it's going to be the case, and we're hoping that the season is going to start by the end of July. We don't know what the hub cities are going to be yet, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, but the ones under consideration, according to Bettman, Vegas, Toronto, Dallas, Columbus, Edmonton, Dallas. I don't know why Dallas was mentioned twice in this, but it is. Los Angeles, Minnesota, Vancouver, and Pittsburgh. trying to count how many teams are on the West Coast. Vegas, Edmonton, Minnesota's west-ish, Vancouver, heck, Dallas, LA is a Western team, obviously. So just trying to react to this in real time. Pittsburgh, East Coast. In this circumstance, it seems like Minnesota and Columbus would be more considered East. That's where we're at right now for the National Hockey League. Breaking news to pass along there. Okay. Does Roy Williams deserve the benefit of the doubt? That's next on the drive.